Welcome to Locus Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. This November, Portland voters will have an opportunity to vote on a complex measure that would amend the city charter in some drastic ways. The changes include ranked choice voting, expanding the city council to 12 members who would each represent one of four districts, and shifting from a commission form of government where the mayor and city commissioners directly manage the city's bureaus to a city council that sets policy rather than managing business. The mayor would run the city's day-to-day operations with the help of a professional city administrator. There's a lot to digest in this ballot measure, so we'll be focusing two Locus Focus episodes on explaining its pros and cons. Today we talk with Portland Charter Commission member Candace Avalos, who is the executive director of Verde, about the proposed city charter changes and their rationale. Candace, welcome to Locus Focus.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I don't know how many people in the community really understand what's on the ballot this November, which is one reason why I'm going to be doing this show and another show in a couple of weeks to explain what these city charter changes would be. First of all, how do you plan on getting word out to people that there's a really important ballot measure to vote on this November?
Yeah, well, first of all, we're super excited. We're really proud of what we've put together. And there's been a lot of conversation in the city over the past few years on charter change. So I think we have the benefit of the conversation from the last few years, not only candidates who are running on that issue, but just the city, people noticing that there are things within the city that could change. So the winds are shifting in the right direction for people to be paying attention. So that's really helping us in this process of getting the word out. But for sure, it's going to be necessary that we are really clear with Portlanders on what they're voting on and why we've put together this package.
Well, I was reading the introduction to the last report that the commission put out, and it was interesting to look at all the different issues that are being voted on in a single ballot measure. So what fascinated me was reading the rationale for why you put so many different ideas together. And I understand the city attorney is signed off on that, saying, yes, it fits the state regulation that ballot measures must be single issue. But there seem to be a lot of different issues. So I kind of want to start by detailing each one. And then afterwards, we'll sort of talk about the rationale about why this is a single ballot measure. So the first thing that comes to mind is this whole thing of ranked choice voting, which people have been talking about for a really long time. I know the Sightline Institute up in Seattle, and they have a representative down here in Portland who does a lot of writing about Portland politics, and they are big proponents of ranked choice voting. So let's talk about what that is and why so many progressives are in favor of it.
Ranked choice voting is a way to give voters more choice and more options at the ballot box. So it's really popular amongst democracy reform people because it expands the way that you think about how you're voting for candidates. Currently, we have a first past the post type of system where 50% plus one, of the people receive that elected person. And the challenges with that system is that, especially in an at-large system that we currently have, essentially the same group of 50% plus one of people get to elect all of the councilors and the mayor. So what we're proposing, and we'll talk more about the districts in a second, but with ranked choice voting, when you have multiple people that you're going to be able to rank, and we rank everything. We rank our favorite pop stars, we rank our favorite ice cream flavors. We all naturally, intuitively understand what it means to say, here's my absolute favorite, here's what I can, I support, but it's not like my number one. And we all have our reasons for how we rank that. So by giving voters the opportunity to really think about who represents them and give them a way to show their preference, besides just saying, I have to vote for this one person, or I have to vote strategically because I know that this candidate that I really like is, a newcomer, or maybe they have alternative views that not the whole city won't support, but I really like them and I think they represent me. It's going to give those kinds of folks an opportunity to say, I'm going to put, them in my number one choice. And then maybe my number two is going to be the established candidate, right, or the incumbent. But people are really going to have the opportunity to vote their instincts instead of strategically.
Actually, it reminds me back in 1980 when I voted for Barry Commoner for president. And if we'd had ranked choice voting in those days, I would have put him number one and Jimmy Carter number two. And maybe if a lot more people like me had done that, Jimmy Carter might have carried Oregon. So this is one of the examples that has kind of bothered me for a really long time about the difference between voting your conscience and voting pragmatically. And I think it's really split the progressive movement in a lot of ways. So let's talk about how this can kind of help us maybe build more coalition conversations within progressive groups themselves about how to be strategic about voting at the same time as we push candidates to represent more fully our values and our vision.
Yeah, so I think that what's going to happen, and are you wanting me to talk a little more about multi-member districts?
We'll get to that in a minute. Okay. I have more questions about that.
Okay.
Ranked choice voting, actually, I've had a lot of shows about it in the past, and so that's something I really like to have people understand why it's a direction that a lot of places are going in.
Gotcha. Yeah, so, you know, with ranked choice, again, it gives you an opportunity to say, you know, here's who I actually like. And when more and more people are deciding that they like a candidate that's maybe energetic and new on the scene, that is bringing fresh ideas, that candidate is going to have a much easier time being elected in a system that really favors incumbency, it really favors establishment candidates. And so this could, in a city like Portland, which is generally liberal, generally all of our candidates are liberal in some way, from, you know, centrist to progressive. So we have a certain kind of flavor of politician that we like here. And I think that having it'll be interesting to see when multiple people decide to run for seats, to see how people decide to rank them because they are so similar a lot of times. And I think a lot of it's going to come down to who did I connect with, who is on my doorstep, who was able to make an impact on me beyond just like the policies, because we all know that, yes, the policies matter, but a lot of us really vote on like what feels right for us and who we feel represents our voice. So I think that's really going to open up the opportunity for candidates like that to step up and be competitive in the system. And it's going to give voters a lot of options when they're ranking their ballots.
Well, I think the big criticisms about Portland government, probably the first one is the commission form of government, which is rather antiquated. But the other one has to do with, why don't we have better candidates running for office? How would this help us to get better people to actually run, so we're not kind of always voting for the same status quo in a lot of ways?
Well, I have lots of opinions, especially as someone who did run for city council a couple years ago. It's really tough in the system to run. It is really expensive. When you are trying to reach 650K voters, it's just not reasonable within especially the time frame, because also we have primaries and the general election, which that's one other thing that's that we're removing is the primary. And so it's really difficult to get the wide reach, and often the people that can are the ones that have the dollars to do all of the mailers, to do all of the TV ads. So it's going to make it much more accessible to newer voices to run.
It was interesting when Joanne Hardesty ran originally in 2018, I guess it was, and I had friends who were going, how can she possibly win? The police are going to run her out of town. And it was amazing that she won. And not only did she, and she won against this person who has been running forever, who actually just ran for the 6th district and came in last or something. But she really had a resounding victory. Now, of course, since she's been in the city commission, she's, I think, run up against a lot of the status quo things, again, that are a struggle. And we'll see how it comes out in the fall. But how do you see perhaps her campaign as an example of what could happen more successfully and more easily if we were to follow the directions of the Charter Commission?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, I think that her campaign definitely was very invigorating for a lot of Portlanders, because she had such a different voice and she was able to build that broad coalition under the current system that we have. And that took a lot of work. You know, it was not easy. But I think that what she is coming up against, and just this concept of like this butting up against the status quo, you know, the status quo, the whole point of status quo is that often like it takes over the new voice, right? So in a system where if she was running under ranked choice, it could really help her galvanize her base and those voices that often get overvoted or outvoted or, you know, overwhelmed by different funded interests that come in to take over the narrative. I think that you're just strategy-wise, you can really count more on those voices that often get outvoted because you have a different way to show up on the ballot. And, you know, it's not, of course, it's important to be ranked first, but getting ranked second or third does make a difference, especially when people's first candidates don't go through. If you can get enough second place votes, like you can still be competitive. Whereas right now it's just like, if you're not first, you're last. So I think that would really change how the demographic demographics can support a candidate.
It seems that just about everybody in Portland wants to change our form of government, and seems to be a lot of support for that. But when I hear people talking about, people who actually know about this charter change, when they talk about the actual details of it, some of the issues that have been raised, which is what we'll talk about now, where they have some questions, has to do with the number of districts, the number of elected people from each district in particular. And so I wanted to talk about, first of all, why only four districts?
So the issue of commission form of government is definitely top of mind for many Portlanders. And we on the Charter Commission came in knowing that that was something we needed to tackle. I would say either not, if not second, but first to that was the issue of people wanting to be geographically represented. So we were coming in knowing that those were really popular ideas, that those changes were being asked by, you know, Portlanders. And we wanted to meet that need while also not creating any unintended consequences like what we believe single member districts and what a lot of research supports, that single member districts can become too small. And then you kind of have these, you know, fiefdoms in the district form. And that can also exclude a lot of diverse voices. And so we were trying to find the balance between how do we give folks what they desperately want, which is that representation. And, you know, you can be represented in a lot of ways, but it does feel really personal to folks to be like, you live in my neighborhood, you know my streets, you know what's going on over here, especially for folks that live in East Portland who have long said that they feel neglected in City Hall. So the four big districts helps us avoid the problem of creating these tiny slivers of the city where we, you know, one of the biggest concerns, at least that I certainly had, was single member districts that are really small like that can lead to a lot of stagnation in housing progress, because people will say, well, I don't want new housing developments built in my little slice of town. And you have kind of that control as a one person representing that part of the city. And so we wanted to avoid that issue, especially as we all know we're dealing with an affordable housing crisis, a homelessness crisis. And having the four large districts, you know, yeah, it's going to have a wide swath of geography. But at the same time, that's where we're pairing it with multi-member districts, as in we have three members representing each one, because we feel that each of those members can address a different need in the community. And that would be better than having like four districts that have just one person each. I think that was the dynamic we were playing with, of like the amount of like geographic physical space and how many people could represent in that space.
Well, one question I have about only having four, because I was trying to think about how that's going to be divided. And that's another mystery. And that's been criticized actually by Bob Weinstein, who wrote this big blog a couple months ago, criticizing. I mean, actually, he raised some questions that have made me question, and that's what I want to ask you about today.
Yeah.
But he did talk about the problem with the districts not being defined before people are voting on it, and he had some concerns that it would give the voters more information if they knew what the districts were. And we can talk in a moment about why mm-hmm. you decided not to do that. But I just wonder why you didn't have at least six districts, since there's six divisions, the six quarters. Portland used to be a town of four quarters. Now we have six quarters.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I don't know about the new South Portland district, because I think it's pretty small, actually, compared to some of the others. But even if you combine that with Southwest Portland, still there's a big difference between Northeast Portland and North Portland, and then certainly mm-hmm. Northwest, Southwest, and Southeast. So why didn't you at least have five or six quadrants as opposed to just four districts?
What we were juggling was the combination of how many quadrants or districts and how many members per district, totaling how many city council members. So right now with the four and three, that equals 12. We did a lot of different polling, a lot of talking with community, and, you know, we're going from four to 12, which is already three times the size. And 12 seemed to be that number where people were like, it's a little high, but that I can deal with that change. Once you started going over 12, we kind of saw the point of diminishing returns, where 15, 16, 18 really wasn't feeling good for Portlanders that we were polling and talking to. So that was the struggle for us of like, okay, how can we meet this? Like, we don't want to overdo it with how many counselors we're adding. We want to make sure that there's multi-member districts, and the data really shows that one and even two members per district is not ideal. It's three is where the benefits that we're trying to achieve with proportional representation, single transferable voting, or ranked choice voting, those were met when you hit that third person threshold. So you see how we kind of had to juggle how much we felt we could add based on those numbers. And we do feel, you know, yes, I get it. I get that there's like four doesn't feel like the natural, you know, quadrants, if you will, of Portland. But I do hope that the districting committee can, you know, they're going to have the requirements of it has to be of equal population size. So it's not like you can have one tiny little district and one large one. They have to be comparable population wise. They have to make sure not to, you know, cut into interest groups so hard. And Portland is a place where people of color in particular are really scattered compared to other cities where often you can find them in certain neighborhoods and you can draw lines around to help them have representation. Portland's not built that way, especially due to gentrification. So we felt that this wider swath too would be able to get a larger amount of communities of color to be represented in each, and so that their interest groups could be heard. And it's not just people of color, it's all kinds of political minorities and ideologies.
Well, you're listening to Locus Focus on KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Oregon, Seattle stations KBFG, LPFM, and KODX, LPFM, KMUN and KCBB in Astoria, Oregon, KCEI in Taos, New Mexico, Radio Free Moscow in Idaho, and Radio Tacoma. And today we're talking with Portland Charter Commission member Candace Avalos about the proposed city charter changes and the rationale. Well, two other criticisms of the proposed city charter changes that Bob Weinstein raised and a couple other people I've talked to have raised is if they think that 12 is too many. And they also raise concerns about having an even number of city council people because you're going to have more of a tendency for ties. And I know that the mayor would break the ties in the proposal, but to avoid ties, why not have an uneven number of city council members?
I think a lot of that was partially the numbers game that we were dealing with, but also, you know, we did go back and forth on this concept of should the mayor be a voting member of the council? Should they just be the tie? Should they have no role at all? In our first draft of like our proposal, we actually had it as just 12. And, you know, we had lots of discussions around this, around what we felt was, you know, yes, we get it that when you see an even number that you automatically think there's going to be a tie, there's going to be deadlock. That's scary, especially in a city that people already feel there's deadlock on a lot of issues. And, you know I personally was someone who was on team like don't have the mayor involved. And that's, you know, we can talk more about form of government and how we were trying to distribute the powers amongst all of the members of the council. But I do think now we talked about it and decided that having the mayor being a tiebreaker brings them in enough into the city council business where they're going to need to work with the council to negotiate issues of policy, but not so much in that they, because they already have outsized power. We're giving them the ability to oversee the city manager who's going to oversee all the bureaus. That is a huge shift in who is controlling kind of the day-to-day operations. We wanted to make sure that we didn't give the mayor an additional power of being a voting member of the council, because as we all know, you know, power is felt in a lot of different ways. And if you're the mayor and you oversee all of the bureaus and you're on the council helping set the agenda or make these big decisions, that's a lot to give to one person. And we were trying our best to find a balance, especially because we're introducing ranked choice voting in districts where people are feeling really excited about that. That actually polled really well with people. And we didn't want to do that and be like, yay, we're going to bring all these awesome new voices to the council and we're going to strip them of completely all their power. So that balance was really important to us to make sure that the council was very legislative focused, that they had the power of the purse. So they have, you know, we were intentional about giving them more budgetary oversight so that the mayor can't also just like, you know, if they're overseeing the bureaus and they just get to decide the budget, how they it currently is structured, again, that was a power imbalance that we saw. So I hear that. I understand. I think that we've found a compromise by having a mayor needing to be a part of that. And I know, you know, personally, I think there's going to be lots of course, we don't know what the people that are going to be elected are going to do. But in my view, if I'm on the council and there's 12 of us, I'm going to get that eighth person, you know, not just that seventh person, but my strategy is get to eight. And right now, even with the odd number, there's still a strategy, right? It's like, how do we get to three votes, right? So I think that there's a lot that can be maneuvered in the system to ensure that it, not everything is a 6-6. And I truly don't think it's going to be that way. I get why that sounds scary, but I think strategically, the people on the council are not going to want the mayor involved. And so they're going to find ways to get to 7 or 8.
Now, I've also heard criticism that 12 is just too many members, and why not make it 9 or 10? And I'm trying to think of cities comparable in size to Portland or larger and what the size of their city councils are. And I know that you've done a lot of research on that. So let's talk a little bit about other models in other cities and how they compare to what Portland's done. I mean, one of the things that that's been frustrating to me watching Portland politics is that we basically, I'd say, have a weak mayor model for governance. But other cities that have weak mayors usually have a strong city manager, mm-hmm. and the mayor's just the figurehead. In our city, I don't think we know what the mayor does, and sometimes I think the mayor doesn't know what the mayor is doing. So let's talk about these conundrums.
Sure. You know, as we were looking across the country, because one of the things that we've heard a lot, especially after our proposal has dropped, is, you know, why didn't you just copy what Seattle's doing, or why didn't you copy what San Francisco or New York or whatever, these major cities that are, you know, similar-ish in size to Portland. One, I think the biggest thing that we discovered is that no system actually is a perfect copycat. You look and you can see like the general framing, like some of them are like city manager council form, some of them are strong mayor council form. But when you really dive into the details of like how those powers are distributed, they all are super different. So we really pushed back against this idea that there was something we could just, you know, look over the shoulder of Seattle and say, we're going to copy all those answers. And we had to take into consideration that our city is just different in general. We've got a different population, we have different needs, our politics are different to these cities, and we're trying to match this. You know, I know that in one of the challenges we struggled with is like, how do we show a vision to Portlanders where they don't get so stuck in like who currently is on council, because it'd be like, no, I don't want that person, or I don't want the mayor to have this kind of power, because you get stuck on like what you don't like about what's happening right now. So I think that was also a tricky thing for us to balance the political side of that and trying to say, you know, here is a model that is proven to work. So what we came up with, and, you know, I was the form of government co-chair with Andrew Speer. And so him and I talked at length about how do we create a form that doesn't perfectly copy anything, because nothing is perfectly copyable, but also doesn't get too hybrid in the way that we just end up with the same confusion of who's in charge of what. And so having this like, the way we like to say it is a strong mayor and a legislative council form of government is how we've structured it. And having that city manager or city administrator being that extra layer, because we heard a lot from folks, they're like, we just want someone that knows what they're doing to oversee the bureaus, because politicians don't always have expertise in a lot of the different areas, and they were getting frustrated. And, you know, we have the commissioner form, so all of them are doing it. So it's like, okay, how do we do that while also realizing that having a city manager that is unelected have an enormous amount of power is also not ideal for Portlanders, especially as a city that's really politically involved. People that really push on our council to do things for them, and different lots of advocacy groups that are always working within City Hall to make change. We didn't think that it fit our city politics to have this manager unelected that could just take on, you know, years and years and years. We really felt that having, if we're introducing ranked choice voting, if we're introducing districts, and we're saying, you know, you have the power to choose the person that you want, we want to make sure that they actually have the power to change things. So that's why we didn't go with a traditional manager council form. And the hybrid, you know, again, we didn't want it to be too hybrid. We wanted to make clear the mayor is in charge of the bureaus. They're in charge of the day-to-day. The council does have a say in who the city manager or the city administrator is. They have to get approved, kind of like in Congress, where the president has to get all of their secretaries approved. And they also have a power to remove that person if they have a supermajority of the council's like, this person's not working for whatever reason. So we were balancing that as well as saying the council, what we really need and what people are saying is like, they want to hear from you. They want you to be in their communities. They want to know that they have someone they can call on. And that is something that is a big complaint, that the councilors are so unattainable because they're busy looking over the water bureau or the police bureau. So we're saying we're giving you more time in your schedule to be in community and to deal with policy issues, because that's really the vision that Portlanders want. They're like, what's the policy issue to address homelessness? What's the policy issue to deal with police accountability? And now we're going to have a strong council that's going to be elected from the people, geographically represented, focusing just on that. I think that's going to make a big difference in how people feel they can access the council.
Well, one of the things that made me the most nervous when I was first hearing about these changes was the idea of having what was called a city manager. I appreciate that it's actually you're calling it a city administrator, which sounds a little bit more like what you're just describing. I grew up in a much smaller city than Portland back east, and we had a city manager, and the mayor, it seemed to me the mayor and the city council did nothing, and the manager ran the city.
Yeah.
And in those days, it was not a very well-run city. Mm-hmm. And I've been spend time in other cities like Oakland, California, used to be a city manager government until Jerry Brown became mayor, and then he changed the city charter and became a strong mayor, and I think really improved Oakland. And also I spent a lot of time in Richmond, California, where my exposure to the city manager was the day after the Chevron refurbishing in Portland.
Wow.
And people were just like laying into the city government, and the manager's the one who spoke, not the mayor. Mm. And when he said, the next time this happens, we'll do this, and everybody just, you know, no, there can't be a next time. Mm-hmm. And I thought that, to me, I mean, I wasn't really inside Richmond city politics to understand it, but I knew that the mayor basically had the bully pulpit, but no power. And the city manager was the one who was doing all the negotiations with Chevron, who basically ran the city at that time.
Right.
And it made me really nervous to think about how much power a city manager can have. So how will you ensure that the city administrator doesn't become that kind of power behemoth?
I completely agree with you. And that was definitely my concern and what I was really pushing for, because we were split at one point. We were really like half and half. Some half of us were like, we really want a city manager and them to have the power to make these decisions to clean up Portland. And then the other half of me, including me, felt that if we're going to elect this mayor, we want to, one, you know, people who run, they run on their values. They tell you what they're going to try to accomplish in office. And we wanted to be able to say, like, if our mayor is not accomplishing that, one, they have the power to accomplish it because they're overseeing the manager. They are responsible for the bureaus ultimately. Then we can say, we're voting you out. Because in a situation like you're describing, if you don't like what's going on, the only people you can vote out are the mayor and the council. And if they have no power, what's the point? So that was super important to us and how we ended up coming to this model. And again, it was a lot of compromise. I mean, as I said, we were really split. And this really felt like the natural way to accomplish what people were wanting, was some more streamlined administration of bureaus whilst making sure that actually the person you're holding accountable is the mayor. And they're responsible for that city manager, or the city administrator. And that is why we call it city administrator, because manager council is a recognizable form of government. That's not what we've created. We have created more of a mayor council form.
Well, let's get back for a moment to having district elections as opposed to citywide elections. I'm thinking about a city that is one of the role models a lot of people look for district elections, and that's San Francisco. And they changed their way of electing their city council back in the late 1970s. And the first election that happened after that elected Harvey Milk to represent the Castro and Dan White to represent South San Francisco. And I think it shows what you might come up with. Mm-hmm. And hopefully we wouldn't have a similar relationship between a Dan White and a Harvey Milk in Portland. But I do think that having district elections also can bring some interesting, very diverse forces in, which could be actually very hostile to each other. Mm-hmm. And there was a period, you know, in Portland back in the early 80s, I guess, where East Portland was annexed into Portland. And this guy, Bob Koch, became the city commissioner from East Portland. And he was really at odds with the rest of the city commission. Mm. So I think that when we start bringing some very diverse voices in, how do you prepare for the kinds of fireworks that might happen?
It is absolutely possible. And it is, I hear why that sounds scary or that feels concerning. At the same time, what I really feel is at currently how it's structured, all we have are Dan Whites.
Oh, I hope not. You know, it's better than Dan White.
Okay, it means better than Dan White. But you know what I mean? Like, all we have are Harvey Milks. I mean, I don't know how to perfectly put the analogy. But what I'm saying is I think that we often are electing a certain like mindset, a certain ideology. And yeah, it is going to make some tension if you have very disparate ideologies on council. But that's what we want. I really think that that's what a democracy is made of. I think it's made of people that are fighting for different issues that represent different communities, and people want to feel like they're being fought for. And I know that I represent a lot of communities that I'm in a lot of communities that don't feel represented. And so being able to say we're sending our champion into council to fight for what we need is going to be important. Is it going to create tension? Of course. I mean, I love it. I'm the politics junkie here, and I love to see that tension. I think controversy with civility is really important. And I think that that's how we're going to get to the best ideas that are going to actually serve all of us. Because right now it's like you've got all these folks that, you know, kind of are catering to a certain group of people. And not only are we not getting our people not being represented, but the ideas, like there's such a lack of diversity of ideas too, and of like what's possible. And that's really frustrating, I know, for me as a voter. Is it going to be fun to watch? Maybe it might be a little chaotic, but I'm hoping that in the end, with the way that we've structured all of the rest of the government, we're going to have some really strong discussion. We're going to bring some new ideas into council and hopefully be able to tackle our problems more holistically than we have been.
Well, you're listening to Locus Focus on KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Oregon. Seattle stations KBFG LPFM and KODXL PFM, KMUN and KCBB in Astoria, Oregon, KCEI in Taos, New Mexico, Radio Free Moscow in Idaho, and Radio Tacoma. And today we're talking with Portland Charter Commission member Candace Avalos about the proposed city charter changes and their rationale. Well, one of the things that frustrates Portlanders, I think, the most about city government is having these city commissioners running these bureaus. And there have been several instances where the commissioner, and he might have been a really great guy and he had really good progressive politics, he really didn't know how to run the water bureau, one example. And there's been several others. So how will this form of government change that by removing each individual commissioner from being in charge of bureaus, which they may have a certain amount of fascination or excitement about, but not much skill?
One of the things that excites me about this new form of government and being able to streamline all of the bureaus under a synced up leadership is, currently in our commission form of government, are you familiar with Mike Myers and his position in the city? He's the Community Safety Transition Director.
I know his name. Actually, I don't know much about what he does. And this is an example of, I think in Portland, we don't really know who the people are who are doing stuff. We just know the name of our city council and our mayor.
Absolutely. So Mike Myers is someone who was, it seemed like Mayor Wheeler and Commissioner Hardesty were discussing how to address this issue of larger community safety. And Mike Myers used to run the Fire Bureau for like a long time. He's got lots of experience in this area of public safety. And so they, you know, he doesn't in this current form really have the power to oversee all of the public safety bureaus. So that's, you know, BOIC, that's fire, that's police. But what they're creating here, I think, is going to be a great model for what our new government is going to show, because you can have a mayor, you're going to have a city administrator underneath that. And then, yes, there you've got the bureau heads, but I see there being another layer in between of someone that has expertise in this area. So if we have someone that's overseeing public safety bureaus, if we have someone overseeing the public works bureaus, so like the water, BES, etc., that we can bring in and that can have expertise in those areas of those bureaus, that is what we're hoping to create and hoping to have more leadership that those bureaus can look to, because part of their frustration is their leaders change often because they're counselors and they're just, you know, they're politicians, right? They have to be elected. And so there's politics that get involved, what makes it tricky to deal with the bureau, with moving the bureau forward. So I'm hoping that what this will create is this extra layer of administration that can be more targeted towards those areas. Because a city manager or administrator, they're not going to know everything about all the bureaus, right? They're just kind of coordinating these areas. But having this layer of folks that can say, we're familiar with the Water Bureau kind of issue. Issues, water, BES.
BES is Bureau of Environmental Services,
Sorry,
those who don't know.
Yes, thank you.
It makes me think about a man who actually was the head of the Bureau of Environmental Services for a number of years, who I had a lot of respect for, and he was the one who was moving Bureau of Environmental Services from just being pipes and sewers to being green spaces and understanding the importance of getting stormwater into the ground as opposed to in sewer pipes and into the river. And he was under a lot of attack by the Portland Business Alliance and some other polluters who thought the point of BES is just to, you know, build gray structure and forget about all this green infrastructure. Well, he being beholden to the city commissioner who was in charge of BES, he got fired. Mm. Actually kind of maneuvered out. It was, I thought, kind of a nasty way. And it was an example of what happens when politics gets in the way of dealing with city bureaus.
Yeah.
How will this new proposal prevent people who are really doing a good job in their bureaus and who are really relating to the community not be at the mercy of elected officials?
Mm-hmm. You know, it's our intention to not completely sever the relationship between the bureaus and the commissioners or the council members, which is what we are planning to call the new folks, but instead to say, you know, and they currently do this. It's just not as consistent, but they do have these different committees that the councilors, the commissioners, sorry, I keep interchanging the terms, the current commissioners work on, where, you know, like the housing issues or issues of public safety. And so what we're hoping, and we've talked about this intent, and, you know, we didn't want to be super prescriptive in the charter because the charter is like our constitution, and like a lot of those little details are going to need to be worked out with, you know, how the staff will find it best to function, I guess. But ideally, we'll have the counselors still being able to influence bureau activities in the way of, like, you know, my community is, you know, lacking green space. Here's one example. Cully, you know, Verde does a lot of work in the Cully neighborhood, that, and our goal is to bring green infrastructure to Cully that has just not had that investment.
You've been doing a really good job, actually.
Thank you. Yeah. Appreciate that. So if I'm a commissioner that represents that part of town, and I can say, you know, how can we strategize between the Bureau of Planning Sustainability, between the Bureau of Environmental Services, to bring more of those investments into this part of the neighborhood that have been lacking. So I would still be able, like, let's say I'm a commissioner or a counselor, I would be able to influence that discussion. That might be between not only talking with the bureaus, probably having a committee to talk about green infrastructure, negotiating with the mayor and saying, you know, politically, like, this is the right thing to do because people are really going to support this, and then working its way into, if you will, the executive branch, because it's going to be a legislative and an executive branch. That's how I'm hoping that counselors will still be able to influence those things without being the person that's the day-to-day, that's like overseeing and managing these folks, so that you know, we can't say, I can't be like, oh, well, this person isn't doing what I'm wanting and I'm going to fire them. There's going to be kind of that barrier that they won't have that direct access. Of course, the mayor could fire them. So there's some level of politicalness that can come from that, but it's a lot more limited.
When you're going back and forth between talking about the city commissioners and the city councilors, it made me think about the different names that these elected officials in cities have. Like in San Francisco, it's the Board of Supervisors. Mm. What do you have any sense of what is the difference between being a Board of Supervisors, being a city council, and being a city commission?
Interesting.
And I don't know any, I'm not sure what they call them in Seattle. I think they're city council people in Seattle.
Yeah. Well, actually, the city lawyer asked us at one point, like, what are we going to call these new folks? Because commissioners really goes in line with commission form of government and how it's structured to oversee bureaus. So we talked about it and decided that council member is what we're going to go with. I think that a city council, you know, counsel and advise are really similar words. I think that they, I wouldn't personally know. I haven't thought about what the difference is between a board of advisors and a council.
Oh, that's supervisor. That's
board of supervisors.
Call them in San Francisco.
Oh, gotcha. I think that it wouldn't make sense to call the structure that we're creating supervisors, because I would see that more aligned with commissioners, actually. And I don't know. I don't actually know, like, how people will define these different terms, but the way I'm hearing it is, I think council really represents like a council of people that represent the community, and they're advising on different issues, but they're doing policy issues. I think supervisors kind of implies more like I'm overseeing something, which is what the commission form is like.
There's going to be an election and this will pass or not pass. Mm-hmm. But once it passes, if it does pass, how do we transition to this new form of government?
Well, I'll say that I've actually been really impressed with city staff, because along our entire process, they've really been coming with us in the way of preparing for what how they would adjust based on the changes we're proposing. The Office of Management and Finance put together this really awesome memo that described how they would work on that transition. And, you know, behind the scenes, city staff are already working on changing some of the systems, even if it weren't to pass, right? Like, they're like, outside of the Charter Commission process, they've really been working internally to streamline the systems. We're hoping that we're going to give them the right tools with this charter change to be able to make all of the streamlined changes they're trying to do. So they've really come along with us to envision what that transition looks like. And some of this information, like, there's a whole transition plan that you can find on our charter website, but the brief details of it include: the goal is that by January 1st, 2025, this new government would be installed. And so if this passes in November, it will affect the 2024 election. What's interesting is all of the people that are currently running in for the 2022 election for a 4-year term, if this charter amendment passes, they're only going to have a 2-year term. Everyone's going to have to run again. So nobody is getting grandfathered into the system. All of the folks are going to need to rerun for their position. And it's just going to depend on where they live and where the district lines are drawn, how that's going to look. It could be that, you know, 3 of the current commissioners end up being in the same district, and therefore, if they want to continue on, they're going to run again. So there's a lot up in the air. I'm actually really excited to see what happens. I'm very curious. But essentially, the goal is to be able to by January 1st, 2025, because people that get elected in 2024 would be starting January 1, 25.
So that means that Dan Ryan and Joanne Hardesty would have to run again.
Exactly.
And Maps and Rubio are still...
Yeah, their term is already for 2024, so they would be up anyway, same as the mayor. And this also applies to the city auditor. So they just got elected, and they won in the primary, so they also would need to run again in 24.
How many people even vote for city auditor? How many people even know that there is a city auditor?
I don't know the numbers of how many people vote. I mean, and it's hard for me to tell, because I, like, that's all I do on my police accountability work since I chair the Citizen Review Committee. All we do is interact with the auditor, even though the current auditor did remove independent police review out of there. That's a different day and a different topic. But yeah, I'm not sure how many people are aware. It is not necessarily super common that we have an elected auditor, but we really feel that it's important to have an elected person. We didn't really change many things related to the auditor's office in our charter change issues, but the issues of election are going to affect the auditor. So they will still be an at-large person. So the whole city will elect them, and they will still be using, like, they'll be using ranked choice voting as well as the mayor, who's going to be at-large.
So how does ranked choice voting differ when you have a multi-member district that you're voting for, and just in the case of the mayor or the city auditor, a single person mm-hmm. running at large?
It won't necessarily be different. The only thing that's, as far as, like, how the voter uses ranked choice voting, they're still going to see, you know, here's my district. I've got 12 people running for these 3 seats, and here are the people that I'm ranking. Likely we'll rank the top 5. We're waiting to hear from the city elections office how many will be ranked. That's the sweet spot. And then when they look at the auditor or mayor section, they're just going to see the same, you know, they're going to see a list of people, and they're going to rank their top 5. The only difference is there's only going to be 1 person that wins versus 3 people that win.
Well, you're listening to Locus Focus on KBOO Community Radio in Portland, Oregon, Seattle stations KBFD LPFM, KODX LPFM, KMUN, and KCBB in Astoria, Oregon, KCEI in Taos, New Mexico, Radio Free Moscow in Idaho, and Radio Tacoma. And today we're talking with Portland Charter Commission member Candace Avalos about the proposed city charter changes and their rationale. Well, one of the things that really stood out to me when I looked at who's on the Charter Commission is the diversity on that, which for Portland seemed to be a new day, and also that you're goals. I mean, all the mission of each of the steps of the charter change. I mean, that it's all about equity, justice, mm-hmm. and climate change. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of curious about the commitment to diversity and how that's reflected in the decisions that you've made.
Mm-hmm. You know, I feel really lucky to be among this group of 20 commissioners. I think that it's a really solid representation of the city, and it's in so many facets, not just our racial and ethnic diversity, but just in our experiences, in our expertise, in our fields of work. We've got people from the business community. We've got people from nonprofits. We've got younger folks who are just coming out of college. We've got folks that are retired and have, you know, lots of experience working, and some of them working in city government. And so, you know, what has been interesting to me is, despite all of that, and trust me, we have gotten into it. Like, there is no doubt that we have had our disagreements and that we've really had to like grind through to come to what we came to. But at the end of the day, 17 of us voted for this package, and that is not insignificant. Can you imagine getting 17 people right now to agree to anything? So we actually are really proud of that. And I think that we came to that group decision because of all of the process that we partook in, not only talking to community, we talked to thousands of people, we did lots of polling, and then we all just represent certain parts of community who we were kind of off doing our like own anecdotal research. And so I think it was really beautiful, really, what came out of this, because we came together, we decided, here are the outcomes we're trying to achieve. What is the best way to achieve those outcomes? And there's lots of ways that you could achieve those outcomes. But we came up with something that everyone felt they could put their weight behind and say, like, this is what we feel is meeting that outcome and that need, what Portlanders have asked of us, and is reflective of the very different voices that we all represent.
What were the oppositions that the three people who opposed the charter changes, what did they raise? I know that one of them actually ran against Joanne Hardesty, and he's mm-hmm. the one who lost. Mm-hmm. So I'm just curious, did you think that there was some good reasoning behind their vote against it?
Yeah. So two of the three that voted against it were kind of newer to the commission, which I think was just really hard for them, honestly. Like, I couldn't imagine coming in a couple months before we were ready to make our final decision and trying to get caught up on all of the really deep discussion that we had and have their say right in this process. So I feel like those two in particular, there were some things that they didn't agree with that I feel like we, not all of us agreed with either, but we really worked hard to talk through it, and they didn't have that benefit. So I feel like there was a little bit of that going on with some of the no votes. I think their concerns did seem to be around multi-member districts. They didn't really like how that was going to, they didn't like those outcomes, or they didn't feel like it was going to meet the need. We did a lot of research on that that has been studied globally, and it's actually pretty common globally what we're doing. So we are being trailblazers here. We're not being light about the fact that we're pushing something really transformative and innovative for our city, and we think that we deserve it, honestly. So it is going to be a change that is going to push us as a city, but I think for the better. So we didn't agree ultimately on that. I think the other person who you mentioned who had run for council this past year was really adamant about the fact that they were all combined into one measure, which I know we're going to talk about. Maybe we can talk about that next.
Let's talk about that. So yeah. Why were they all combined into one measure? Yeah.
So what we really believe is, you know, all of the decisions that we made were not made in a vacuum. I know for me personally, my decision on, you know, whether the mayor has a vote or not, or whether, you know, we have multi-member districts and how many districts and how the council is going to work, they were all really intertwined. And we don't feel that it would make sense to give Portlanders a a la carte, you know, chopped up version, because the combination is really the greater than the sum of its parts, right? And so we, you know, the horrible scenario would be that we put all of these three on different measures and people vote for, you know, ranked choice voting and multi-member districts, which actually was really popular with people, but they don't vote for a form of government. And then it's like, oh my gosh, we have 12 people running all the bureaus and that's a nightmare scenario. But also we just really felt not only that they were all really intertwined, they depend on each other. And we were presenting a vision to voters of how holistically our government's going to look. And we want folks to really, you know, lean into that vision with us. And we felt that by giving them that vision and giving them the option to say, we are just moving in a completely different direction, we're moving forward. And that was better than confusing Portlanders and saying, you could choose this thing or that thing, because they don't have the benefit of being able to have all the deep discussion and research and community engagement that we had to show why they all are connected.
Well, I've read several fears and heard some people who are really steeped in city politics expressing concerns that, for instance, like, I think some people think the most important thing is to get rid of the commission form of government. Mm-hmm. And so there's agreement on that, but they're concerned that people will vote no on something else. Like, they don't want the city manager or the city administrator, or they don't want ranked mm-hmm. choice voting or whatever. Mm-hmm. So are you concerned that this whole package may go down because people don't want a single part of it?
I'm not, actually, and partly because of some of the polling that we did that showed that people would support all of it as a package. So not only were we hearing from people that they would support it in that way, I think that both of the big issues, there's like three, if you will, kind of areas. It's like the districting, the ranked choice voting, and the form of government are kind of the three things in the package. And they're all actually really popular. So I think that it's stronger together, and we feel really confident it's going to pass.
Well, one last question. To me, it's interesting that there's a huge emphasis on diversity, cultural and other diversity on the committee and in this charter change. Mm-hmm. The people that have raised their voices the most loudly against this are white guys. Mm-hmm. And some of them are white guys I have a lot of respect for. Mm-hmm. I just wonder if that's crossed your mind at all.
Always crossed my mind. I think that, again, we're really pushing for something that is going to give so many more people access to the ballot box. You know, for example, in the primary, it's often an older, whiter populace that vote in the primary. By eliminating that, we're already creating people that are going to be voting are more likely going to be more diverse. That's one small example of the ways that all of our changes are going to invite new voices. And, you know, yeah, when new voices come in and they say, I don't like this thing we've been doing forever and we want to do it differently, of course that scares people that are used to doing it a certain way. And I would just invite folks that are in that camp to just really think holistically about what is going to be best for all of us, because what we all want is we want that harmony. You know, people are sick of like divisiveness. They're sick of people being at odds. And the only way we're going to create that harmony is if, you know, all of those older white men who have had a lot of power and influence really bring in these communities that are disgruntled, that often include communities of color. That's how we're going to get the harmony. We're not going to get it by continuing to let people that are out of touch with all of communities make all the decisions. So I think that it's to all of our benefit to be able to be empowered in having people represent us. And that's how we're going to get the best solutions.
Because what I get a sense from the criticisms that I've read of it, that each criticizer likes parts of the change. They just don't like it all. Mm-hmm. And I just kind of am trying to understand the whole psychology of this. Because one person who is opposed, in fact, he's starting a PAC to defeat the ballot measure. Mm-hmm. He's an old friend of mine. And I know, I mean, on lots and lots of things we've agreed upon. Mm-hmm. I just wonder if you have any sense of like how to assuage some of their fears mm-hmm. or why they're nitpicking on this and not being able to see the bigger picture so that your vision can come across to these folks as well.
Yeah. I think ultimately it comes down to what are our values. And we really we always turn back to that, because for the Charter Commission, our values were more people voting, more people being represented, more streamlined government. That was our goal. And so if we have to agree, like I would want to start there. I'm like, to, you know, the folks that you're describing, I would say to them, what is your value? What do you actually want out of our government? Do you want more people to have access to the ballot box? Because if you don't, then we're just like, we're never going to come to an agreement. But if you do, let's talk about the ways that this, what we're proposing, is going to do that. That's my intent in having conversations with these folks. But for me, you know, I would like to get past the like, oh, I don't like this little thing or that thing. I want to know, what are your values, and how can we meet your values? And here's the argument for why we feel like we've met those, if we agree on those values.
Well, I will try to ask those questions of, I'm going to be having Stephen Moskowitz, who's a former city attorney, on August 22nd.
Great.
And he's the one who's starting the pack to defeat it. And I am very interested in hearing how he can frame, and how the other people who are opposing the measure can frame those concerns. Mm-hmm. And I think if we can have that discussion, it may really help to resolve some differences.
Well, tell him to call me. I'm happy to talk it out.
I will do that. Well, thanks so much for being on, Candace. It's been great talking to you. And maybe we'll chat some more before the election in November.
Absolutely. Thanks so much.
We've been talking with Portland Charter Commission member Candace Avalos, and you've been listening to Locus Focus on KBOO Community Radio in Portland. Seattle stations KBFG LPF and KODX LPFM, KMUN and KCB in Astoria, Oregon, KCEI in Taos, New Mexico, Radio Free Moscow in Idaho, and Radio Tacoma. If you're just tuning in and you'd like to hear what you missed, or you want your friends or family to hear this show, you can listen to a podcast on our website, kboo.fm/locus-focus. To hear previous episodes of this show or any of our KBOO Public Affairs programming, go to kboo.fm or listen on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. I want to give special thanks to the KBOO staff, who are still doing an incredible job after 2.5 years of pandemic, of not only keeping KBOO in the air, but helping all us volunteers make the best radio during this pandemic. And you can help us if you're able by becoming a member of KBOO or renewing your membership if you're already a member. We're independent, community-supported, volunteer-powered radio. Go to kboo.fm/give or text KBOO to 44321. Or please support the community station you're listening to right now. Thanks for supporting community-powered radio. I'm Barbara Bernstein. My engineer is Ray Bodwell. Next week, we'll rebroadcast an interview I did with former Columbia Riverkeeper staff attorney Aaron Saylor last January about the proposed expansion of TC Energy's gas transmission Northwest Pipeline. We'll go out with music by Bob Dylan. Thanks for listening. Stay safe, get your COVID shots, and remember to socially distance and wear a mask when necessary.
John is in the basement mixing up the medicine. I'm on the pavement thinking about the government. The man in a trench coat, batch out, laid off, says he's got a bad cough, wants to get it paid off. Look out, kid, it's something you did. God knows when, but you're doing it again. You better duck down the alleyway looking for a new friend. The man in a coonskin cap in a pig pen wants $11 bills. You only got 10. Maggie comes fleet-foot, face full of black soot, talking at the heat, put plants in the bed, but the phone's tapped anyway. Maggie says the many say they must bust an early man, orders from the DA. Look out, kid, don't matter what you did, but walk on your tiptoes, don't tie no bows. Better stay away from those that carry around a fire hose. Keep a clean nose, wash your plain clothes. You don't need a weatherman to know which way the wind blows. Oh, get sick, get well, hang around the inkwell, hang bell, hard to tell if anything is gonna sell. Try hard, get bought, get back, ride rail, get jailed, jump bail, join the army if you fail. Look out, kid, you're gonna get hit by losers, cheaters, six-time users, hanging around the theaters. Girl by the whirlpools looking for a new fool, don't follow leaders, or watch your parking meters.